extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. Lloyd Sam joins me today. Big show on this Thursday. El Tráfico coming up on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. Plus a lot more from Match Day 8, including an interview with Mark Delgado, one of the standouts from the Galaxy so far. He'll join me to talk about his efforts this year, why he loves getting in goal-scoring positions for the first time, really, in his career, and how far this Galaxy team can go. Plus, misery in CONCACAF Champions Cup for Major League Soccer. Miami experiences peak fever. Cucho is out again against Tigres. Krutai and Wilfred Nancy keeps things in-house. Plus, Rev's going to Rev, and they take on Charlotte this weekend. Lloyd Sam's going to help me break that down, as well as the new DP, Liel Abada, and much, much more. Lloyd, welcome to the show. Welcome to Partner in Soccer Status. It's your show now, dude. Take it away. Solo show. All Lloyd
Solo
Sam,
show.
It's like a World Cup qualifier, bro. You just you go. I'll listen, all right?
Oh, man, you remember those days. Well, first of all, I do want to say I'm a big fan of the show. You know, like, getting prepared for the season, this definitely helps commentators. It's hard to cover all the teams, and you guys do a great job. Doyle Goss as well. You know, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a partner. It's an official status. Once you have it, nobody can take it away from you, Lloyd. That's it,
and
man.
Me and you have done work together, so, you know, this is quite familiar as well. It's there's a lot of stuff to unpack today. You know, I'm going to be dropping some hot takes.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, get the meter ready. I'll be ready for you. Let's start with this. Let's start with the action in CONCACAF this week. Ugh, boy, okay. You know, as somebody who loves this competition, it's both tough and comforting to feel these feelings of disappointment, of failure in high-leverage moments against Liga MX, of uncertainty as to whether an MLS team will even make the final. Inter Miami get the full experience. Up 1-0, Tomas Aviles, a wonderful set-piece goal, and then David Ruiz somehow gets three yellow cards? One.
Yeah.
What do you think? One is like mistaken identity, right?
Yeah. I think it was cleared up towards the end that it was actually given to Alba, right? But for a while, I think everybody was wondering what on earth is going on. The only one that wasn't wondering that was David Ruiz.
Exactly.
He was completely oblivious. We're thinking he had two already. He's like, oh, let me get one more just to make sure. I actually really like him as a player. I like the way he approaches the game as a young man. You know, he's a fearless guy. But maybe a little bit, he probably learned a big lesson right there. You know, when you're on a yellow, you got to play the game differently.
Yeah, the yellows weren't, the math wasn't mathing on the yellows. And then the second yellow is just such an unfortunate situation. And it's sort of the definition to me of 20-year-old who, one of his main attributes is his aggression, his willingness to go into duels, his sort of don't back down attitude, even at a young age. And you just can't throw the hand out in any game with video review, but let alone against Liga MX and these Gigantes that just seem to have a feel for every single possible situation like that, where, hey, that guy's on a yellow card. I just felt something hit my head. I'm going down like a piano just got dropped on me. Like,
yeah, man.
It's just the way CONCACAF is and the way these teams are. There's just that little bit of experience.
There's things that happen in your young career that, again, you remember for the rest of your career. And I think Aiden Morris as well, same kind of like second yellow. It's like when you're on a yellow, you just don't lunge in. You just don't give an excuse, if you get what I'm saying, at that point. And, yeah, Ruiz has learned. He's going to learn, and he'll remember that for a long time. You don't forget those sort of things because, you know, he'll look at the scoreline and feel like he's let the team down a little bit there,
At home, up 1-0, Monterrey not playing their absolute best, but they're always going to get chances. They're always going to have quality. Maxi Meza has been a good.
I really like him.
Against MLS teams for many years at this point, and it ends up being 2-1. And afterwards, Tata Martino says, Club America are the favorites to win the competition. Lloyd, Inter Miami want this. They want CONCACAF Champions Cup. They want to be atop the region. Is it over for them, or can they do this headed back to Monterey?
Who are they going to have available when they go back? That's a question. You know, that's the big question. Is the GOAT going to be back by then? So they're down by one goal. Of course it's not over. It's a game of football. Anything can happen in that game of football. Even without the GOAT, they could go and get a result. It's not going to be easy, of course. But, you know, winning the trophy is never easy. You've got to, you know, win some hard games on the road. And it is definitely not over.
No. Not over, but...
Don't ask me about the New England fixture, if that's over or not. But that one is definitely not over, the Inter-Miami game.
Yeah, different-sized mountains to climb, let's just say, for Miami exactly. And the Revs. Before we hit these other games, I am curious, just your thoughts on Miami so far this year. It's been a little bit of a mixed bag. There's been a lot of high points. There's been some shaky moments. And, of course, there's always the question over every game, which is whether Lionel will play. What do you think so far of the project and the start for Tata?
It's almost like when you've written them off, then they've come through and let you know that they're real. And then you're like, okay, they're real. And then they lose 4-0 to Red Bulls. So it's very hard to answer right now. Who are they? I tell you what I really don't like, when they go to three at the back. You know, and this is something... I'm going to talk about on my broadcast this weekend for New England Revolution, who went to three in the back. You can't react and just go to three at the back. Three at the back has to be a rehearsed thing, that the system is this. Like Wilfred Nancy, like Pat Noonan at FC Cincinnati. That's when three at the back works. You can't just go to it on a whim. Every time in my career that's happened, we've not done well in our teams because it's not coached well. You take a guy out the middle, it needs to be really understood. So I see Inter Miami, every time they go through at the back, they seem like they get spanked. And I'm just like, please, stop it. Get four at the back. 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 is a lot more balanced and it's easier to react to. So to answer your question, I don't know who they are right now. I think that will come in the next few games. Obviously, if they've got the GOAT fit, you know, they've got a much better chance. But at least, you know, Suarez has been scoring some goals. That was one big question mark, and he's answered it to say, I can do this still.
That preseason feels like a million years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was one of the ones saying, like, hold on, guys. One, it's preseason. Two, they're flying all around the world. Anything that happens on this trip, take it with about an entire container of salt. We are seeing some of the concerns pop up, namely in the injury department. It's an older team.
Who's surprised? You can't send all the players. No. For one, I played in Miami for, 2 years? I played in Miami. It's a hard climate to play in anyway. Like, to play over 70 minutes over there. Like, once I got to 70 to 90 now was like another game. And, you know, the GOAT is playing all 90 minutes. Suarez all night. It was way too much what they were doing, those flights and all that. I know, like, there's the other side and marketing and all that stuff and maybe bringing in some revenue. But, man, it's a lot for older players, you know. So, and I know firsthand, to play in Miami that age, I feel for those guys. Now, you know, the GOAT is getting maybe wrapped in some cotton wool and he can come back and have that little bit of rest, which he probably needed. But, you know, I hope he can hit the ground running again when he comes back.
We'll see if Lionel Messi is available in Colorado this weekend. Inter-Miami taking on the Rapids. Then, of course, next week is a big one to try to turn the tide in CONCACAF. Crew are in the best position of the three left. They drew 1-1 at home with Tigres. Diego Rossi finally scored. It had been sort of will he? What's happening here? For the number they signed him for, the expectations, they wanted more. Finally got a goal here. And APG does APG things. Like
I feel for Diego Rossi a little bit. You know, he's been played in different roles a little bit. Sometimes he's been used as the guy to keep the width on the right. And Wilfred Nancy is doing, he did something, especially against the Red Bulls, where Sean Zawodzki was right wing back, but he was tucking into the inside and Rossi was going out to the right. So he's been sacrificed sometimes a little bit where it's like he's not always been as close to goal, you know, but obviously you want a better return regardless. I was happy to see him score in that game, a really, really important goal.
You should see the sort of the relief. They're like, okay, finally, maybe this is the moment I needed to just kind of get that stuff off my back, keep moving forward. But of course, the monkey on everybody's back in Columbus right now is Cucho Hernandez, and whether or not he will play this upcoming weekend, two games out.
This is the show I get. I get the show to talk about Cucho. All right, cool. Let's get it.
That's the luck of your draw right now. Wilfred Nancy said after the Tigres game, quote, "We just did a game and we're talking about Cucho. No answer for that. We don't play tennis. We play football. Football, this is 11 players on the pitch. Be patient. I know that this is your job. Next question, please." Now, I just watched his press conference today, April 4th, Thursday. He was asked again, had about a two-minute answer, and it basically boiled down to, look, business inside the team, based on the culture I'm building and the way that I handle things and that the club handles things, is that we're not going to make those things and the details therein public. Everybody understands what's happening within the club, within the squad, and this is my choice. This is how I want to do things. A lot of people, myself included, are naturally curious, Lloyd.
Like, yeah.
Whether or not we deserve the information,
yeah.
I want to know, how can the best player on the best team not be playing in some of the biggest moments of the season, and we're not sure why? Now,
yeah.
My thoughts don't really matter. If I was a Crew fan, I'd be a little bit more passionate about this because it's the team I live and die with the results of, and it's a team that I think can win the competition. So I would be pressing for answers. But
yeah.
I'm curious what the players in the locker room are thinking right now, because you've been in locker rooms. You may have been in a situation like this. Is this uncommon? Is this normal? Like, how does this get
handled? This has happened before in my career, and just in and around my team or other teams, you know, where there's discipline needs to happen just to set a standard. And I don't know exactly what happened, but it looks like it was about the Charlotte game where he's come off and, you know, he's thrown a bit of a fit on the side. And he was walking into the locker room and not going to the bench. And I don't know how that was resolved after, but when I saw it, I was a little bit disappointed as well, because I was like, you know, why do you feel like you can go to the locker room and not the bench when every player on the team would go sit on the bench like you should, you know? So I think it stems from that. What happens up? Well, first of all, Wilfred Nancy, let's say this. Wilfred Nancy knows that Cucho Hernandez playing gives them the best chance of winning. And that's what people aren't talking about. Everyone's like, why? Obviously, he wants to play Cucho, but obviously he must have done something enough that Wilfred Nancy thinks that in the long run, to set this standard is more important for their culture. And they just won last year, so how can you really question Wilfred Nancy and his methods? You know what I'm saying? You can't just let guys get away with certain things and then everybody, it gets loose. So I think it hurts the team in the short run, but maybe in the long run, I hope to see Cucho back this weekend. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it should continue. But when Cucho was disciplined, how did he take it? Did he argue back? Did he go to the teammates and say, guys, sorry, I should never act like that? Because if he did, then it's like, why did it take this long? But we don't know if the response was just as egregious as the act. You know, and that's where I've got questions to say what happened. But I definitely understand, you know, disciplining what we saw there. Because I believe Rudy Camacho got up and tried to bring him back to the bench. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, he was a bit hot and bothered. But what I would say is Wilfred Nancy wants Cucho Hernandez to play. So if he feels like this is what he has to do to set a standard for everybody there. And, you know, in MLS, we've been around DP culture. And some guys have got away with other things that others, it's just not a good thing for team spirit. Like, people need to be on the same page. Also, Wilfred Nancy wasn't there that day when Cucho was walking to the locker room. So is it almost like disrespect to, is it Ampadu? Ampadu was the other coach.
Yeah, Kwame, yeah.
There was a lot going on there where Wilfred's probably watching, like I'm watching on TV thinking, oh my God, this can't happen. We need to really set a standard. So, you know, I guess it sounds like I'm taking Wilfred's side, but Wilfred wants Cucho to play. So at the end of the day, he's doing what he feels he needs to do. And I think he's earned that for us to just trust maybe, like, this might be better in the long run. But what sucks is that you've got a Champions Cup game at the same time where you can't recover from that. So it's like, it's not ideal.
That's the bummer. That's the bummer, right? Is that we all want to see Cucho play, and not just, hey, look, I want to see him play this weekend against DC at home, 7:30 p.m. Eastern MLS season pass. I want to see him play against Tigres because I want to see what I think is the best representation of soccer in our league at the fullest possible strength against one of the teams that MLS clubs have just historically not been able to get over the hump against. So yeah, that's where the disappointment comes from, right?
But Wilfred Nancy wants to see him play as well, though.
There's no way he wants to be on that sideline and not have Cucho, but I understand sort of the principle that Wilfred is operating on here, which is there are rules, and if there are rules and cultural expectations, based on everything you've heard him say for the last X number of years in Columbus, in Montreal, etc., everything you know about him, I would expect him to say, well, we're not making exceptions.
We've seen this before in many sports, though.
Coaches do. And understandably so. They want their best players. They're judged on results.
So it can spiral out of control sometimes if you don't discipline it right. You know, when people are just doing whatever they want, some DPs might think these rules don't apply to me, you know, but it looks like, you know, he's back in training and he should be back this week. And that's good for everyone, especially Columbus.
Agreed. Yeah. More Cucho, but look, I understand from...
Love Cucho as a player, I have to say that. He's having an outstanding season.
And you know what? The fire that he has is often his fuel.
Don't want to take that away
from him. It's often his fuel. So, you know, I would expect that we see him very, very soon and these questions in, but it is a big story. No doubt about that. Another big story. Caleb Porter comes to the Revs. Revs had such a difficult time at the end of last year. Their culture was in disarray. It has not gotten corrected just yet. Advanced in CCC, but haven't got a win in MLS.
What are you saying is not got corrected? The culture?
There's some issues.
Something's going on. Something's going on. Yeah, we don't know
wins
what
in the league.
Yeah.
They, not surprisingly, got swamped by Club America, who, you know, that's what America do to many teams, whether it's in Liga MX or in MLS. 4-0 win
at Gillette. This was different, Andrew.
And then afterwards, Caleb said, quote, they were the better team today. It's that simple. There's not much more I have to say. It's like having 11 DPs on the field. They essentially have 11 DPs. What's going on
with that? That's not the reason. They didn't lose the game because Club America had 11 DPs. They lost the game because they didn't swing any punches. It was disjointed. They went to a three in the back. What I would say is, if you look at New England's games, I've watched a lot of their games, you know, preparing for this. Not a lot of their games. I've watched all of their games. Some of the games, they've lost by one goal. They've been in the game. Sometimes they could have scored. It could have been maybe an extra pass from Chunkalai or something, or someone else getting the play right. They're not a million miles off. You know, they're in Champions Cup. It's not been easy in MLS. But this game was different. This game... they didn't swing any punches. It was disjointed. They don't understand how to play in a three in the back. You know, I've already given the evidence of, you know, when you react to it. And the three in the back was just odd. You know, you're bringing Joe Mensah in. And I was just like, what was that about? It was just, oh, man, there was no rhythm. No really, like, oh, that... Did you watch? I'm guessing you watched that game.
And, you know, the disappointing part to me is that, you know, in that three in the back structure, you want to give Jones more freedom. You want to give your fullbacks an opportunity to provide width. And then you want, you know, Vrioni and Heal and Chankalai as close to goal as possible. But to lose the ball on the first goal, and then to your point about three in the back, the disorganization and inability to get pressure to the ball as America just tore them apart, that's where you're like, you know, those aren't the mistakes. You can't make those mistakes. And
if you've got three at the back, you should be smothering a guy in the box like that. How is he being able to wiggle? So it's like, that's not affecting you stopping goals. Get that extra guy in midfield so he can maybe dictate the tempo. And you know what? But going into that game, I was thinking, I fancy New England to make this difficult because it's always difficult over there. You know, Club America are coming a long way into Gillette Stadium. It's not an easy place to go.
The weather was terrible.
Turf, it's cold, it's not necessarily glamorous, you know, and they've always played on that it's hard to go there, and they've let them walk in and win 4-0. I was really, really, really disappointed with that performance, and, you know, just not throwing no punches, changing the formation, they got it. I would say Caleb Porter, I don't even like to come out and say things like this, but he got it wrong in that game. Should have kept with the 4-2-3-1. Get guys, keep doing what you're doing. You know, it will come. One needs to fly in maybe early and it could be different. Now, it's like the morale, the confidence, everything is down. Now going back into the league, you've got that second leg to go back to Club America. You'd rather just cancel that now. You know, you're not going to win by more than three goals over there. You know, it's just a horrible situation. You know, now they've got Charlotte on the weekend who are doing well as well. So not a great situation for the Revs.
I think the big thing for Caleb to figure out is central midfield. It hasn't seemed to me, and I think that's why he goes to the three probably, like he knows the mix that he wants in there, whether it's sort of a double pivot or a true, you know, 4-3-3, three-man midfield that can shift and change, and there's not a, you know, as much structure as you would see in like a 4-2-3-1. I don't, other than Polster, who does he trust? That's the part that I haven't figured out yet, and who he thinks he can rely upon in central midfield.
Oh, man. Honestly, it's who does he trust? But I think that there's capable guys that could get a job done there. You know, Noel Buck, I really like him. We're going to talk about young players later. I really like him, but he's kind of been in and out. Ian Hawks has been in and out. Kane's been in and out. Out of those three, someone there is good enough to play that role if you were doing a 4-2-3-1. You know, just to sit in there, provide some energy, keep the ball moving. And Ian Hawks is a player I've played with. He's good enough. You know, he came in last year, and I thought he did really well when he did come in. You know, so I think the pieces are there. They've got good enough players. You know, it's down to the manager now to get it out of them in the right system. And you've got to whisper the right things in their ears to get them playing well. And it's not happening so far. But the Champions Cup thing has just put them back even more, where that should have been, you know, almost the light at the end of the tunnel. It's like, we're not doing well in the league, but, you know, Club America's coming here and we're giving everything.
It was until America got to town.
Oh my gosh.
How about Charlotte? How do they get a win? How do they get their first win against Charlotte, the Revs?
How do Revs get their first win against Charlotte?
How would it come about, in your opinion?
How would it come about? Maybe playing a system that everybody's comfortable with. You know, get rid of that three at the back, in my opinion. Go to a 4-2-3-1, which, you know, I feel is just a balanced formation. Get two dogs in there, maybe Buck, Polster, Hawks, whatever it is. I mean, it's kind of what they were doing. And it wasn't good enough at first because they weren't winning games. But they were swinging some punches. They were in games. They were attacking. I think you go back to what you know. Carlos Hill, he scored some worldies. Can he be better throughout the course of the 90 minutes? Probably at times. You know, he has scored the worldies, so he's doing. But Vrioni, how do you get him going? You know, that's the real question. Chunkalai in the league hasn't been that great. He's been good in Champions Cup. But do I have the answer? I'm not there on the training pitch. You know what I'm saying? That's where the answer's.
Yeah.
What I would say is the pieces are there.
Okay. The pieces have changed.
Do you think the pieces are there?
I think they are too. To me, starting this season, given the talent level, I had some concerns about midfield and then who they were going to go with first choice center back, but Kessler was coming back, so it seemed like that would settle itself. Goalkeeper was not a place that I expected issues to start, and you heard Porter say after Ravas didn't start that, hey, he wasn't informed, didn't get any reps with Slovakia. We thought Earl Edwards would be the better choice, but goalkeeper has been such a security blanket for this team for so long that when you pull that blanket out, some of the other flaws maybe start to show themselves as well.
Isn't that sad just saying that? They've had some of the best keepers and they've sold them. And it's like, now we're talking about goalkeeper again. They got to find another one.
That's why you got to strike when the iron's hot, right? You got to win when you got the pieces, when you got the supporters, shield winning team, etc. Look,
I like the players that they have at their disposal. You know, you've got to get them going. You've got to be whispering the right things in their ears, man. Like,
You think Dean is whispering the right things in Charlotte's ears right now? What have you made of Dean Smith's start in Charlotte?
I would say it's a good, solid start Dean Smith has had. You know, coming from, I talked about this, you know, not so long ago, coming from what it was last year, quite complicated tactics, he's come and simplified things. He's come and given them a defensive foundation with Melander and Privet, Burn, Oren, and on the other side, Kalina. That has been a constant. You know, those guys have played all the time. In front of them, Westwood's there. Diani, I really like Diani. That signing, really good signing. But he's had to wait. He's had to wait for his signings. So he's someone that's had to work with limited resources, and he's done a good job. you know, going away to Vancouver, getting a point, went away to Toronto, lost to Insigne Worldy, you know, went to Nashville, maybe not the best game, but should have had a penalty. Things could have been different, you know. So I feel like Dean Smith has done really well. And then in the games they've won, Columbus, that was a bit of a freak game. The referee was all over the place in that game, that Columbus won. Cincinnati, what, they're a few minutes away from getting another win. So, and those are like two of the hardest teams to play, I would say, at home, Cincinnati and Columbus. He's done well. He's done well. There's a good feeling in and around Charlotte FC at the moment. And then, you know, Abada comes in now. So you're getting the reinforcements when you've already done well. I mean, it's a good situation. I would hope to see Abada play this weekend as well.
I've been impressed by what Dean Smith has done, even in just the sense of taking control of the situation, both from a tactical standpoint, but also from a personnel standpoint. You know, there had been, seemed like just sort of waffling on, are these the right DPs? How do we play these DPs? How do they all mix together? You know, can we get out from underneath Kamil Jozwiak? Dean Smith came in and said very clearly, let's make the moves. Like, let's pull the Band-Aid off. Like,
yeah,
it's okay. Like, Kirill Swiderski's a wonderful player. He wants to leave. He might not perfectly fit what I want to do.
Yeah.
All good. Let's find the right situation. And then the tactical one, to me, you hit the nail on the head, was simplifying. Last year, it just felt like, particularly in the midfield, in transition moments,
yeah,
there just wasn't an understanding of space, how compact they wanted to be, and like what the defensive responsibilities were to stop transition and to prevent 1v1 moments in the back. And this year, he was like, you know what? It might be a little bit less expansive.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to put my players in positions where they're trying to solve that problem on the field and they don't have the structure around them to do it.
And he said a quote one time, which, you know, it was, I don't want the other team to have 1v1s with my keeper. And it was like, you would think, of course, you would think that's an obvious thing. But last year, you know, that wasn't obvious. That was like, this is how we're playing and we're okay with it being 1v1s with our keeper, which was just so strange. And they made it to the playing game, fair play. It makes you think, you know, if you were a little bit more pragmatic, where could you have really got to, you know? And, you know, this season, exactly what you said, simplified it. It's a lot better. The culture, the communication in interviews, you know, that he does, is very clear. You understand what he's thinking. And again, you know, the DP's come in, young DP, Abada's come in, and he's going to be on the wing. I feel like that just strengthens things. You're doing well and you get guys to come in. And I feel
that's
like
the missing piece, right? It's the high end. It's the difference maker. Copetti's been out. He's the only DP on the roster. I'm a big Pat Ajiman guy. This whole show, big Ajiman Hive show.
Yeah. Okay.
Copetti or Ajiman up top? Maybe not.
I mean,
let's not say generally. Let's just say this weekend in New England, who would you start?
Judging from what we've seen on the field, I think Ajiman's in the form to start the game. You know, that's just going off form. Copetti, obviously, he's been injured. He's coming back. But Ajiman has done well. He's caused problems every game. Got a goal against Columbus. But when he hasn't got a goal, he's looked like he could have one as well, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Against Nashville.
It looks like should he have could been... have two and a half per game sometimes.
He could have a couple. And, you know, I said on a podcast about him, I want him to stick his chest out even more, Patrick Ajiman, and say, I want to be the penalty taker. You know, imagine if he was taking penalties as well. It seems like nobody really wanted to take it, but Nashville should have had a penalty, could have scored, could have been brought down going in. It's just like, there's always moments where you're like, ooh, and ah, when Ajiman's playing. And I don't, some people punish people for that, you know, missing maybe chances and what. I'm like, no, he's getting in behind the defender of the year, Matt Miazga, and making him look quite ordinary. You know, he got in behind him and could have scored maybe a couple chances with Miazga on him. But really, he is a handful. He is a handful to deal with. I would want to see, at the moment, Ajiman start. If Copetti comes in, gets a goal, maybe he wins it back. But the competition it will be healthy.
Competition's good. Let me ask you this. So Ajiman has all he's got tools. You can see that. His ability to get in behind, his ability to hold off players. he's still working his way forward technically in his first touch and maybe setting himself up in the best possible position to shoot. But some of these things come down to confidence in front of goal. Was there ever a moment in your career where you felt something switch for you in those high leverage final third moments? Like, or did Lloyd Sam just have it the whole time, you know, with no big deal?
No, I wouldn't say I had it the whole time. You know, I was a lot of my career more of an assist man. And then I realized that, you know, you're not going to get paid what you want if you're not scoring goals. Yeah. It was as simple as that. And my dad used to tell me all the time as a youngster, you have to score goals. And in my mind, I was like, yeah, whatever, dad, this is how I want to play the game the right way, you know, or whatever, like pass or now. But you have to be thinking about goals because goals keeps you on the team sheet. Goals gets you the new contracts. And I got better with goals as time went on because I knew that I needed to put more emphasis towards it. You know, sometimes people are watching that haven't played and they see someone have a chance that looks easy and they're like, oh my God, how is he missing that? I assure you, in front of goal, there's something that happens to your composure. You know, especially if you've got 30,000 watching you and the ball's bobbling over and it looks like an easy chance. It's never as easy as it looks, you know, in front of goal certain times. So, you know, I would say composure, getting the composure right, it is a big thing in front of goal. And it's never as easy as it looks. Any finish with the goalkeeper somewhat near the goal is not an easy finish to me.
How does that composure come? Can you train it? What do you... Is it just come over time, experience?
You can train it all you want, man. But when you're training it, you're not training it in front of 30,000. So that's what makes it difficult. It's about sometimes the individual. How good are you at handling that? You know, some people don't handle it well. You know, I even kind of did a study on myself one time where I was like, with the first goal, I'm always like pretty composed. But it was very hard for me to get braces, like to get two goals in a game. I would always lose composure if it was my second goal. I was so annoyed at myself.
Putting pressure on yourself.
I was, and why? I should be loose after the first one, but I would always find that I was a little bit more frantic the second time. I spoke to BWP about this sometimes. I said I would never understand. Like my technique would be looser, and it would be a thing that I would be on at myself. Like, no, follow through again when you get there. Don't get lazy with your technique. You know, it's just that mentality to follow through and see it through and do the right habits, you know. And you know, everybody is different. Everyone's different. Some handle it better. BWP would handle it well. Composure in front of goal.
He doesn't seem to be particularly worried about much, Lloyd. I got to tell you, working with him, being around him for almost 2 years now.
What does that mean? He's not worried about much.
He's very even keeled. He just sort of is always on, seemingly always on the same level, floating along.
And well, when it came to goals, he had the formula right. And one thing I used to say to him is always you would focus on getting that connection with your foot and the ball. You know, the connection of him getting a chance, he might wait 82 minutes and he knows once that chance comes, you know, he needs to do certain fundamentals. And, you know, obviously, respect to BWP and the career he's had.
So they hope Lee Alabada will walk in the door with those things in the bag ready to score goals. That was sort of his MO at Celtic, a guy who can come inside and score, but also in 1v1 situations beat players off the dribble. What's the word around the facility? I saw him, he did his first press conference. He came suited and booted, Lloyd.
Suited and booted. Yeah, it was a nice suit, little tie. You know, he came in. And he had a nice aura about him. Came and met the supporters groups at Charlotte FC. And it looks like he's really, really excited about this opportunity. He wanted to come here. You know, he done well at Celtic. He's left Celtic. And he's played a big thing about him is he's played in big games over there. Played in high-pressure moments, Old Firm games, scored goals. And the thing I just talked about BWP and getting that contact right is – there's a lot of one-touch finishes from him in what I like to call the area where goals are scored. I don't know if you've heard me say that before, but I talk about that area a lot, you know, in and around the six-yard box and the penalty spot. He loves to get in that area. And when wingers get in that area and they're willing, you know, that's where a lot of goals come, that willing running to get into that area. And he does that a lot. So I expect to see him diving into the box from the other side more than maybe – you know, taking on players. I see him arriving into that box and finishing left foot, right foot, half volley, laces, side foot. He's got a lot of different kind of finishes, but he's played in high pressure games. I'm excited for, you know, his Charlotte FC career.
What makes a good winger in MLS, in your opinion?
What makes a good winger?
Yeah, yeah. What is that like in this era of MLS where we see, you know, we see traditional wingers, but less so. We see a lot of wingbacks this year, to go to your point about three in the back. Guys that are maybe slotted in as a fullback, but reality are sitting on the back line for much of the game, or the most advanced player in many cases for their team. What makes a good winger in your opinion, having been a pretty good one yourself?
Yeah, I was more of a traditional one, you know, playing on the outside, playing near the line, and then taking on players, getting crosses in and supplying your strikers. You know, that was what I did. But these days, it's more inverted. If you're right-footed, you play on the left so you can threaten the goal a little bit more. If you're left-footed, you play on the right. And then often
They were listening to your dad, Lloyd. They were listening to your dad. Just
my dad was a smart man. An accountant in his day, you know, he was about the money.
The ledger has to be in your favor.
Honestly, Levy, I'm going to disappoint you here and say if I could do it again, I would play on the left more. You know, that Mike Grella role that we had, I would play on that role so I could threaten the goal more.
That's
you
not know, disappointing.
I thought you wanted to hear me glorifying traditional wingers.
No.
Yeah, the only thing about traditional wingers is it's just not a threatening the goal sort of situation. And it's like a Leo Chu. You're on the left, you're left-footed, you're going to go down the line rather than, you know, coming in kind of. That's the first traditional winger that came to mind. On his day, you know, he does all the things. On his day, he does all the things a traditional winger should do. But it's more the fullbacks that are in those positions now and the other guys are threatening the goal. I really do understand why that is the option of choice now for most teams, because it's all about goal output. And the fullbacks, if you get the right kind of fullbacks, like a John Tolkien that can get up there and do everything, you know, and just, you don't really need the winger to be out there. He can be combining with the striker, getting in the box. So I would, if I'm a manager, I would probably play that way now as well.
Who was the best winger during your time in Major League Soccer? Who was the guy you looked around and were like, man, that he cooks? Like that
oh,
guy has
gosh. I thought you were just going to come and say you were the best winger.
No.
Who was the best winger? I'll tell you who some of the other wingers around when I was playing. Fabian Castillo.
Oh, yeah.
FC Dallas. Mm-hmm. He was a good winger getting on the outside. Ethan Finley around that time. Prime Ethan Finley at Columbus.
Yeah. No.
At Columbus. David Akam. He was a good winger as well. Those are the ones that come to mind right now.
Would you?
I was going to say he was of the other mold, where it's like more of the inverted.
Comes inside. He was modern in a way that, you know, was sort of a prelude.
Piatti, because Piatti is just a step above all the names I just said, including myself. He was, honestly, he was such an amazing player, Piatti. He was on Vieri kind of level. It was like those two. And then it's like kind of the rest of us who were still good at what we did, but those guys were just elite. Like Giovinco played around that time. Do we include him as like that kind of?
I want to. To me, he's more of like a withdrawn striker, a second striker.
He's more of a withdrawn striker, but that's why with Piatti, it's kind of like I don't think of him as a winger. Is there anyone else I'm missing?
He had forward tendencies, no doubt about that. I'm trying to think.
They didn't put me in the team of the year as a winger that one year, 2015. I was like, I think they went with fair play. I think they went with Finley and Castillo.
That's why you remember the names.
The word was I was very close. And I was like, oh, thanks a lot. Anyway, so fair play to those guys.
tell me a good Red Bulls, classic Red Bulls story.
You meant to be warning me before we get on here so that I can get my stories ready. Off the ball story or on the ball story?
Let's go on the field. Just a moment that you really remember and cherish or laugh about still to this day.
Wow, the moment I remember and cherish. I've got an off the ball one that I remember.
Oh, no, let's go. Yeah, give me that. Yeah, whatever's fresh.
the boys love this story. You know, to the detriment of myself a little bit. You know, I think we did a NFL fantasy draft in Hobart. Hoboken, and then we were going into the city on the Park train. Oh, if like people
a,
know.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a good day.
If people know, yeah, we've all had a few drinks and we're having a great time. Even guys that aren't in the draft would come and join because it was just a vibe. And then we're getting on the train, and I don't know how it came to it, but people were being dared to do some certain things. Would you lick a pole on the subway on the path?
Lloyd, no.
I don't know what mind I was in, but I was there to lick a pole for $50. And I licked the pole on the path train. I believe it was recorded, seen by the whole team. I still question what sort of audacity. Why would I do something like that? Who knows? I think I was just in one of them moods where I was like, all right, let's shock the world. So that's something that, you know, Sasha, Brad, Dax, all those guys would remember off the ball. On the ball, a story on the ball. Man, there's actually so many. What team you want it from? 2013 or 2015 team?
Let's go back to 2013.
2013. Yeah. With Thierry and them and Tim. Yeah. Oh gosh, man, that was a special team. I would just say the vibe of just playing with Thierry was just different. It isn't a specific story, but I think that we were never the same after. You know, after playing with Thierry and then 2015 team, you see how well we did. There was a lot to take away from that kind of greatness and them kind of habits and standards and being around him for like 2 years and being like, you know, Thierry wouldn't stand for this. Thierry was almost like the police as well. Like, you come in late. Thierry's like, hey. You know, he's coming and checking people. So it was like, he was a real authority around the place, you know, and then you see what he's like on the field. Okay, I've got the story.
All right, here we go.
I went and I whispered in Thierry's ear one time in the game against DC conference final. It was a bit, you know, locked up and we needed something from someone. And, you know, sometimes it might be me, sometimes it might be Brad, but this time it needed to be Thierry for whatever reason. It was a big moment. And I remember I went into Thierry's ear and I said, T, we need a bit of magic from you. And this was a lot of respect from me. I wouldn't normally say that to another guy. Normally I would say that to myself because it's like, why would I go to another man and say it? But it was just the respect to say, you're the one that can unlock this right now. And then lo and behold, minutes later, he gets the ball, takes it down the line, beats a fullback, crosses it for Peggy Luyendula, and he puts it in the back of the net. You know, I don't want to take too much credit for putting the batteries in his back, but I specifically remember this moment. And I feel like I want to ask Thierry about it when I speak to him next and say, do you remember that? Did I have anything to do with that?
Thierry, I asked you to go win the game for us, and you did it, man. You did it.
And he fair play to him. He did it, man. So
what was the difference between that 13 shield and the 15? Like, in the accomplishment of both those things?
I think the 15 shield was more like regular men. You know, we didn't have an elite best player in the world kind of guy.
We were all mortals. You didn't have a
We were all mortals. So yeah. We all had to do more. We all had to bring an attitude. Honestly, when we talk about team spirit, I told you about licking the pole on the subway. You know, we were out doing stuff together. We liked each other. Sasha Kleschen's 30th birthday party. Yeah, you ask him about that party. Like, we went out, did things together in New York City. You know, the wives were all involved and everything. Like, that was team spirit. So I would say it was everybody was on the same level. Jesse came in, held us all accountable. He motivated us to do certain things, you know, that, you know, you need the right motivator to get that out of you. He turned us into leaders. And I think that's helped me be a commentator now. Some of the things I learned from, like, Jesse as well. Some of the things from Thierry in that sort of situation. You know, it's hard to win supporter shields.
Got to be good for an
even harder season. To win MLS Cup.
Yeah. Sadly so. Sadly so for the Red Bulls. Every team in the league still probably believes that they've got a chance here. Lloyd, you've been all around so far, calling games, color commentator here on MLS Season Pass. What's the best team you've seen so far in your travels, or the most interesting team? What stands out to you so far?
The most interesting team. I like what DC United are doing. You know, I wouldn't say that's the best team I've seen, But I like what they're doing. You know, they're trying to do what they can on the ball. And it's just high energy stuff. We've seen that from a few teams. But when they played Portland in my game, they were 2-0 down early. A lot of young guys in the team. And they had the ability to now get it down and fashion chances as well. Benteke up top, buying into everything. I felt like him and Kuda Pietro, he needs to be talked about a little bit more. He's a dog on the field, man. He's running all over the place. He's strong. He's got good instincts, getting in good positions, and he works well with Benteke. I like what he's doing. And very strong, very, very strong. I didn't know how strong he is, but there's a few games I've watched, and like if you barge that guy, you're falling over a lot of the times. Like it's hard to know what he's doing behind the scenes, but he is a real pro about it. So they've been pretty interesting. Red Bulls against Orlando, I did last week. Red Bulls looked really good against the ball. Peter Stroud. I know we're meant to talk about young players, but I'm rolling it all in. Kuda Pietro's one. Peter Stroud. Honestly, I'm running out of good things to say about this guy when I see him play. I feel like he could be talked about a little bit more.
What do you like, Lloyd?
What do I like about him?
Yeah.
His mentality is different. He was a rookie last year. You would never know the way he's playing. He's got some quickness in the midfield, Tyler Adams-esque kind of quickness, where it's like you get in and around him, he's getting there, and he's winning those duels when he's getting there. And on the ball, you're not losing much from him. Like, you know, second half, he had 98% completion rate in the game at some point. I don't know what it ended out as. But he's one of them guys, like Tyler Adams, like you give them a task and they're going to complete the task, you know. That's why when you say, what do I like? I like that he can just do whoever he needs to be. And that was something. And USMNT has got a lot of young guys that can kind of play that kind of role already. And they've got like Stroud, obviously they've got Morris, who aren't even getting close to starting. But I'm like, wow, I wouldn't mind seeing Stroud and Morris together, like in midfield. That would be amazing to me, you know, the attributes they bring.
So, Lloyd, you're saying that maybe the USMNT should play their kids, perhaps.
When you talk about the play your kids, I guess you can call it a campaign if you want around MLS. They are at the forefront of it. Play your kids.
Oh, play your kids.
Play your kids campaign.
Okay, that's a real thing.
I don't know. Maybe it's more of a Twitter thing.
Oh, okay. I like it though. Play your kids. Why not?
I like that you played that clip because it reminds me that I didn't just get put into Apple TV MLS. You know, I've been doing it for a little while. You know, the youth tournaments, USL. I got to see that. It's been a remarkable journey. But yeah, play your kids.
That was a GA Cup clip from years ago that we thought was hilarious here at ETR. Just because we
how did you even find that?
We've always talked. Well, we watch the games, Lloyd. That's part of
you. Remember
the game.
That? You remember that now from back then?
We've had this, Lloyd. We've had this cut and ready to be used for years. For years, and it just happened. Today was the perfect time to drop it in on the show. So you gave me some of your favorite young players here.
Before some of them, I've got more.
Run me through. Let's go.
Duncan Maguire, of course.
Yeah.
No buck. I don't think he's going to be in this league for long. But he's not playing right now. He needs to be playing.
But that's where I talk about Caleb and the trust with the central midfield. The trust and the makeup of that central midfield. I just don't think he's put his finger on it just yet.
Here's one people aren't talking about, and he's not been playing beginning of the season. Nathan Saliba from Montreal. Mm. He's got that dog in him. You know, Aiden Morris got that dog in him. Stroud got that dog in him. Nathan Saliba got that dog in him as well on his day. Yeah, when I've seen him play. Then Fasha's a guy for the future, very young right now for Charlotte FC. I don't know how to say his last name, and I should because I'm a commentator. Nico from San Jose. Chikiris, sorry. I knew that I would say it wrong. I shouldn't have even said it. he looks like a really good prospect. No, I haven't seen too much from him. I may have seen about 10 minutes, and I was like, wait, who's this kid? No, last year he was 17. Yep. I believe at the time, Teddy KDP, I've said Morris Stroud. Yeah, those are some guys I really like.
You're on the good side of extra time with your KDP love. We just all remember that it's that it's Ted. It's not Teddy or Theodore. So we'll all remember that. In this little segment with you, Lloyd, which hasn't been little, it's been an absolute delight, man.
It's been
MLS
long.
MLS Pick'em. Go play it. www.mlssoccer.com/gaming. It's a weekly game. You're basically picking answers to different questions. The big one I'm going to ask you this week, LA Galaxy, LAFC, who's going to score first in the second half? How about just who's going to win, Lloyd?
LA Galaxy versus LAFC. Wait, so who's at home? Oh, wait. Is it neutral side or who's at home?
No. The Rose Bowl game is coming up. So this is not neutral site. This is at LAFC, I believe.
At LAFC. Oh, gosh. LA Galaxy have looked great so far. LAFC won a response. Close game, but I wouldn't be surprised to see LAFC rise to it because they're not going to like how Galaxy are being talked about and all that. So that's going to bring out a lot from LAFC. So I would fancy LAFC to get a result.
The Galaxy have always found a way to be the team that is not so good outside of this game and finds a way in this game. We'll see if LAFC can do that.
Almost like roles reversed possibly here where,
Hey, speaking of the wingers, though, Gabriel Peck and Joe Pansel.
Oh, love those guys. I love those signings. Great signings for the Galaxy. Isn't it even better when they hit the ground running as well?
Yes,
and
it's
like Pencil's doing his thing, Peck's doing his thing, Jovalich up top. It's a great team to watch. Now that you say that, maybe I might fancy Galaxy a little bit more, thinking about their players.
How about this? We'll end you on this one. Al Hampton hit us up and said, Ricky Puig is overrated and a defensive liability. Yes, he can pass and move the ball, but that's it. Which is why he's a Euro dropout.
He's not overrated. He's a great player. I really like what I see from him. This guy.
That's a confusing take. I'm now seeing the Twitter avatar, and it's a black shirt with what looks like a gold crest. So this might be an LAFC supporter
here. Oh, it could be. Okay. Well, no. He's not. He's definitely not overrated. I love watching him play. They've got a good team this year. Mark Delgado as well. I really like him. And, I might as well use this to plug Lloyd's Lab is coming back soon. I used to do it for Charlotte FC where I break down certain moments in the game or goals and stuff. There was a Mark Delgado goal against San Jose where he does so much good work in there. I don't know if you remember that goal, Andrew, where, he makes a great run.
Is it the inside out run and then the ball back across the pencil?
Yes. What that run, how often do we see a run like that?
It's such a good run. It's such a good
run. And then the pass back to Pencil, where Pencil didn't even have to take a touch. There's so much to break down in that play. That might be the first play I break down. I'll send it straight to you, Mr. Weeby.
Retweet, instant retweet, Lloyd.
Appreciate it. Thank you
so much, by the way, for teasing Mark Delgado, which I don't even know if you knew. Mark Delgado was coming up in just a second. I interviewed him yesterday. But thank you so much for your time, man. You are an official partner in soccer in my eyes, and it's been an absolute joy chatting with you.
Yep, you too, Weeby. Love what you guys are doing here, man. I'll be back again soon.
Yes, you will. All right. In the meantime, let's take a listen to this Mark Delgado interview about his time growing up in L.A., signing for Chivas USA, landing with the Galaxy, and now balling out with Joe Pansel. Enjoy. Big extra time welcome to Mark Delgado of the LA Galaxy El Tráfico. Coming up this weekend, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. MLS Season Pass is the spot for that one. A big pregame show. Leading in, I'll be on that one, getting people ready. Mark, what's up, man? How you doing?
What's up? I'm doing well. Just taking it easy and happy to be here with you, brother.
So I'm saying, Mark, I remember a day when I wrote Marco. There were years and years and years that I said, Marky, I'm all about accuracy, Mark. So we're going with Mark. We're sticking with Mark, but I need to understand the personal timeline of first name tweaks.
When I came into this league, it was very another older generation. So guys didn't call me by my nickname. They called me like Marco, so Marco, whatever. I live by it. But my friends still called me Marky. So as I started to come around and I guess do better and, people caught on to Marky and, they respected that. And, it started to go around and Marky. And then as I started getting older, I guess, as I started maturing, me personally, as I started maturing, I wanted to be called Mark, but never made it known. And then I forgot, the year Chris Armas came around in Toronto, you know, very loud. I wouldn't say loud, but he's very straightforward and, you know, whatever you want, like, I want to know, you know. So there was two Markies on the team. And I was like, just call me Mark. And he was like, you want to be called Mark? And I was like, yeah. But like, I'm very, you know, soft spoken. And I said it like underneath my breath, like, yeah, yeah, call me Mark. And he was like, yeah, you want to be called Mark? Just tell me you want to be called Mark. And like it was kind of,
yeah,
like,
yeah, he's putting you forward on the spot. You're like, okay, I thought I did. I thought I did.
And every, like, training's kind of like stopping and everybody's like looking at us. And I'm just like, yeah, just call me Mark. Yeah, let's go with that. And he's like, all right, everybody, we're calling him Mark now. And I was like, all right, cool. He wants to be called Mark. We're going to call him Mark. And it like went from there. And then he went, you know, on his own, and he told the, you know, media and the Alejandra, who's in Toronto, she, you know.
Oh yeah, remember Mark from the PR staff. Yeah. I mean, the word went out, put it in the streets.
Yeah.
Markie's, you know, yeah, Markie's, no, it's Mark.
And I was okay, like, this is becoming a big deal now. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
And now I've made a bigger deal of it than it needs to be made, but we know now how to refer to Mark Delgado, and we have to because you're balling out. Take me inside your El Tráfico week. Is it any different at all?
Honestly, no. Every week for me is just kind of, you know, do what I need to do in training, get the most out of training like I always do. It's just, you know, routine. And then when I go back home, whatever, take a nap, sleep, get your rest. And then it's kind of like get away from the game. And then just kind of like spend time with my wife, go to the beach, you know, really decompress, unwind, and just kind of like relax and just do other things than soccer. Maybe golf once in a while. I'm really into golf right now, so I'm getting into that. But like get away from the game. Just like, and I found that that's really helped a lot. Just to like really relax my mind and the nerves. And in the beginning of my career, it's always been soccer, so repetitive. And it kind of got old, like it became like a job rather than loving what I do. And, you know, it kind of like turned for the worse. But I found a new routine that's really taking a lot of that pressure and stress away, and I've found the joy in the game again. As you can see, as of recently, I've been performing really well and really just enjoying myself more than recently, I guess you could say.
When did you feel that joy went away, and what were the signs for you?
I'm sorry, you cut off a little bit.
Oh yeah, it did just bounce. We'll edit this, no worries. When did you feel that the joy went away, Mark? Like, what were the things that were telltale signs for you of like, hey, something's got to change?
I would say probably my last few years in Toronto. Yeah, it was very, things weren't going well. Things were just, you know, hard given COVID and the lockdowns and everything that was kind of out of our hands. It was hard, and yeah, it was just kind of like waiting to play soccer. When can we play soccer again? And then when we finally got back, then things weren't going too well. And then the whole relocation with the families and everything, it really made me realize how important I guess my own sanity was, and, you know, having that relationship away from the field with my wife and having my own time and being, how important it was just to be like away and being social, doing other things. So, yeah, I've really tried to make that something important to me, and it's a work in progress. And I feel like it's really cleared my, you know, my mind, and really help my body free up. And so now when I get on the field, I'm a lot more relaxed, a lot more free minded, and just enjoying and playing the game.
Like, I've always argued for all of us that it's like, like a tree gets struck by lightning and you cut down that tree 100 years later and you can see that scar and everything's grown around that scar. That to me is what the pandemic is. And so many of us have had realizations or have changed our lives. I want to take you way back though, to a time when it had to be joyful all the time, because we're coming up on El Tráfico and you have two different fan bases, but ultimately you have a city that lives and breathes this game. Tell me about your childhood with soccer.
That was everything to me. You couldn't find me without a ball. On my downtime, I was always kicking the ball against the garage, kicking the ball against the wall, watching Liga MX at the time with my dad.
What was the team? What was your squad? Que equipo?
I didn't have a team, but I definitely had teams I liked to watch. At the time, it was like Toluca, Chivas, America, Cruz Azul. Those teams at the time were fun to watch. Definitely had a special player on Cruz Azul that I, just because we had the same last name, I thought everything of him. El Chelito Delgado. And, I mean, he was a baller. That was fun for sure. And then every time I was at, family stuff with my grandparents or on my dad or mom's side, I was always looking for a ball because I wasn't very social as a kid. But when you put a ball at my feet or give me a ball, just like every other kid, we love to stay active and whatever it is, we like to play, with the ball or whether it's basketball or whatever, we like to be active.
Did you have a choice between Chivas and LA? Because you signed with the Galaxy, with Chivas USA at the time.
Yeah, I did have a choice. I had a talk with my parents about it because my choice was to go to Chivas. Backtrack a little bit. There was a player in the Chivas USA Academy who was involved with the reserve team because there was a reserve league at the time. And I was asking him questions about Chivas and, he liked it and he was getting opportunities to train with some of the first team players. And I liked how that sounded and it sounded like a lot of promise there, an opportunity for me. I had a lot of other friends who went to Galaxy and they just never played. They always try to get the best players from all around. And a lot of my friends who were really good and really high talents just never got the opportunity or they were just overlooked. And I didn't want that for myself. So I went to Chivas with a better, knowledge to knowing that I would have more of a chance. And so I went there and that was after residency. And I trained with them for... Cosmos West Academy turned into Chivas USA Academy. And then there was a trial and I was there and Robin Fraser happened to be there. And I think Greg Vanney as well, but I remember Robin Fraser there and he liked me. And he brought me to preseason with him that year. So I was with them throughout that whole year of preseason, which was 2012. And, yeah, preseason finished. I feel like I did well, but I really wanted to sign. So Europe was on my mind, or just signing a first team contract and really getting that professional career going. So at the time, he used to play in MLS as well a long time ago, but they call him Teddy, and he was involved with the academy. And I kind of just had a talk with them and was like, hey, what's the deal? What's going on? I kind of, want to sign a first team deal already and kind of get that going. If not, then I don't want to waste my time here. And shortly after that, then the talk started happening about, a contract and a deal. And not too long after that, it happened where I signed my first deal.
Yeah. So we're on the brink of El Tráfico, but in the day it was the Super Clásico. And you guys shared a facility and you shared a stadium and it was way more intertwined, let's say, than it is now. What was the difference between Super Clásicos and El Tráfico?
Super Clásicos. I would say that those Super Classicos meant everything to us because you were sharing the same building. You saw them every day. And, you know,
you didn't want to lose. You don't want to hear about it.
You don't want to lose. You don't want to hear about it. I mean, that's what it is. And with, you know, with Trafico, it's the same thing, but it's more of like, you're both LA teams. You know, you both have LA Galaxy and LA Football Club, right? And it's just that much more to it where who's the real LA team or whatever, bragging rights overall. And I think it's just more like a competitive, respectfully. You know, with Chivas, we were always towards the bottom. It wasn't really a competitive team. But when the Super Clásico came around, we really tried to like give everything just to get a result. You know, Galaxy at the time were far more superior. And I think now it's just, you know, we're in first place right now. Things aren't going too well for them, but it's always been a good competitive battle both ways, and it's always been definitely entertaining to be on the field, and I'm sure it's been a lot more entertaining to watch from the outside.
I don't know, man. I haven't been on the field, so I can't tell you what it's like between the lines. What's your favorite moment from El Trafico, from the ones you've played on the Galaxy side?
Favorite moments. My favorite moment was the Rose Bowl. That was unbelievable. That was an unbelievable experience that I'll definitely never forget. You know, the whole setup of the Rose Bowl and going back to the Rose Bowl where I initially started watching the Galaxy was definitely really special. And then going back to it and being a player on the field and representing the Galaxy now definitely meant a lot. And for it to be an El Trafico was definitely something really special. So yeah, definitely a lot of nerves that day, but I'm very happy to come out on top of that day. So yeah.
So how many tickets are we working through this week? Like for an LA kid playing in El Trafico, this has got to be like a text blowing up situation.
Honestly, no.
You reined it in. Yes.
In the beginning.
Okay.
When I first got here, yes. But I really had to have that, you know, that sit down talk. Even though I'm home, I don't want it to be like too comfortable or, you know. So okay. I had that talk with like close friends and families that, you know, I'm not that guy.
I'm not the plug. Yeah, I'm not the
exactly.
plug.
I'm not that guy.
Okay.
100%. I can connect you with the guy. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you know, don't come back to me, period.
Hey, but you're a guy who's making connections on the field too. You like that transition? How would you describe the way Greg Vanney wants you to play on this team?
Hey, I would say it changes. It changes definitely with the personnel on the field. You know, if we have a winger who can get in behind, okay, we want to be, you know, a little higher. And, you know, obviously he just wants me to really be in good spots. And I figured out balance the team and that works. And I figured that out from my beginning years with him, and it works and it's effective. And along with that comes the skill that I can bring and use it to good effect. Now, being on the field, different things are going to be asked of you, whether it's going to go forward, stay back, balance things, keep the ball, make a run to open up space for somebody else. Those things are going to happen. Those things are not really what Greg's telling me to do. He does definitely suggest some things and gives you some options, whether, you know, so you can see it when you're on the field and it does happen. But when you're on the field, you know, nobody's really directing you. It's just all instinct and it's all, you know.
What do you like to do the most? What's the thing that you on the field?
I mean,
that like
right now I love getting forward, you know. Right now I love getting forward. This is the first time in my career I'm getting like stats, you know. I'm like, wow, this is great.
Oh, people live this life? Man.
I'm like, this is nice. And then it helps that, you know, you have Joseph run in and behind these guys who just have speed. Oh my God, that helps so much.
Is that how this Galaxy team is different? Is that how it's different? Is the speed on the wings? Is the flank play?
The flank play is so crucial. I mean, we've always had pieces, but our wingers always wanted the ball to their feet. You know, they wanted to take somebody on one-on-one, which is not bad. It's not bad at all. But the league asks for, you know, runs in behind. And not just this league, the game period asks for runs in behind. And if you can get in behind and have a player who has speed that just absolutely kills people, it is so hard to defend.
Ricky seems like the guy to unlock some of that speed sometimes. He likes to drop in, push the ball from the back, get going at speed. And you talked about balance. How much of your balancing is for Ricky? Let's be honest here. Somebody's got to clean up the mess, no?
Hey, Ricky's he's very sneaky. He is quick. He's quick. He's little and scrawny, but he is quick. He is quick. He can definitely unlock a few things here and there, and he attracts a lot of players and, you know, coming down low or whatever he does. And then he just, you know, he's played with Messi for so long. So, you know, that continues that run and, you know, gets in the box last second for, you know, a nice tap in or whatever, some magic that he pulls off. But given that, there is a lot that's asked definitely of other players around to balance that, right? And me knowing that I can do that, I have no mind doing that as well, balancing it off. You know, he drops down low. Okay, somebody has to be up high. You know, can't have three midfielders flat. Okay, he goes high. I got to drop down. Okay, he comes down low to the right. I got to go all the way to the left. Like, it's just what's being asked. And as long as we're getting results, it's a lot of running and it's a lot of thinking. But, hey, somebody has to do it. And as long as we're getting results, I don't mind.
Greg Vanney clearly has trusted you to do it on all number of different teams he's put together.
Yeah.
How much does trust matter between a player and a coach? How much has it mattered for you over your career?
Oh, 100%. I mean, trust is everything. Not just between the player and the coach, but between with the players on the field as well, knowing that that player will get back or that player will do the right thing. It's everything. And I think what we did this offseason, we did a lot of team bonding stuff that, you know, was building a lot of trust and definitely helped going into preseason and building the chemistry and trust. And, hey, you got this. I got you. I got this. You know, I'm not too worried because I know you got me type deal. And, yeah, it's been very important, and I feel like it's been very crucial to our success this season.
Speaking of guys doing their jobs, it's easy for us to get wrapped up in Dejan and Joe Panso, and now Gabriel Peck is scoring goals, and Ricky. Who is your all-underrated teammate? Who's the guy that you would want to shout out? I would put you on the pedestal right now for the Galaxy. If somebody said, hey, who's the guy they should watch, they probably wouldn't. I'd say Mark Delgado. But I want to know who you would say. Who do you want to give some flowers to?
I appreciate that, truly. Edwin Cerrillo.
Explain.
The guy does his job. You know, what's being asked of him, I feel like it's not rated enough when, you know, something's being asked of you and you're doing it to the best of your ability. It just helps. It just helps, period, all over, because you know what that player is going to do. So you know how to read off of him. Guys already know what he's going to do. So we're not guessing. Things are not so like in between. We're not on like guessing games. Everything is so clear. And what is asked of him, he does, you know, mid-game adjustments. Hey, we need to stay more central, maybe rotate, but always find the middle. You know, it's in one ear and it stays in there. It's not like in one ear and out the other ear. You know, he's adjusting and doing it. So, you know, I respect that a lot. And, you know, I have high praise for him.
Shout out to Edwin. You seem like a guy who is very interested in central midfield play. You know, in your own career, learning it, getting a little intricacies right down. If you played with some ballers in your time, who's your favorite central midfielder in MLS history to play with, to watch, just overall?
To play with? To play with and to watch.
We got some options here. I could run you back through them, but I'm sure your memories are better than mine.
To play with, oh man, Victor Vasquez in Toronto is unbelievable. This guy, he played so simple, and I loved it, and it was so effective. I loved it. Benoit Giroux,
great shout.
Oh my goodness, this guy was unreal. Just and then playing against him in training was just unreal. He'd make you no matter what. Like, it was insane. You saw it coming and balls going through your legs either way. Midfielders, I mean.
How about a guy you just respected a ton that maybe you didn't play with? Maybe you played against him or watched him in the early days?
I mean, those are European ballers right there. Andres Iniesta and Xavi Hernandez. Those guys I idolized and kind of modeled my game with a mixture of what they did, right? Always checking their shoulders, always setting their body up, always knowing your ins and outs, putting your body in between the man and the ball, all those little details that were so subtle but so effective. And just keeping the ball moving. And then seeing a few videos of Zidane, you know, always keeping the ball moving, never stop the ball, let the ball always move and do the work. Like, those little things are so effective. And
those guys are the GOATs. They're the GOATs because of their personal performance, but also because of collective performance. Mark, the Galaxy are trying to get back to that. You guys have that GOAT status throughout time in MLS, but it's been a while. What can this team do?
Listen, we're still a work in progress, and I feel like there's so much more that we can do. A lot of little details just need to be cleaned up. We definitely should have had a result against Miami, a result against St. Louis, but just little details definitely make a big difference. So I think the sky's the limit for us, but you know, we're still gonna push our limit. And you know, like I said, that the relationship between players on the field is still growing, especially with Peck just coming in as well. So, yeah.
I got to ask you this. You got a long career at the age of 28, man. If you could change one moment in your career, what would it be? I have a moment that I might change for you, but I'm curious what you would say.
A moment in my career that
in your career, change. One moment. You just switch the hands of fate.
Like a play or like decision or like
anything,
what?
Man, I'm not going to put the words in your mouth. I have one for you. We'll see what you think about after I hear yours. What's the, what jumps to mind?
I would say the one moment. I would say playing that game against Chivas and CONCACAF, where maybe I could have taken a touch, at least hit the target towards the dying minutes of the game. But that was it. You know, game continued, and I buried my PK, so definitely.
That was my one moment, Mark. That was the one time. Just give me 24 inches south on that ball fight, and we're changing the time in history.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, man. If you just look at that play, it's like, oh, man, but – God, you don't understand how much running it was done in that game. And I can remember vividly, we were defending and I made that run all the way up. And my legs were so gassed. And if I can just like, hey, relax. You got a lot more time than you think.
Take one beat.
Get it on target. Oh, man. Yeah, definitely.
What could have been, but so many awesome times in between. Another one coming this weekend in El Tráfico on Saturday night. You have 283 appearances in Major League Soccer. The record is 498. Kyle Beckerman, you need 216 to pass. I've done the math. You've averaged 26 appearances a year since your first couple years when you were breaking in. It would take you 8.3 seasons, Mark, to get to basically 500 to pass Beckerman. Can you do it? Do you want to do it?
Oh my God. I don't know if I want to do that, but I respect Kyle Beckerman. This guy was awesome. This guy was a baller. World Cup, MLS vet. This guy was truly a great player. But hey, We'll see. We'll see. Definitely.
Never say never. Never say never. We'll see this weekend as well. 4.3 goals per match. That's what El Tráfico averages. You can watch on MLS Season Pass and watch for this baller. Mark Delgado, appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you, my brother.
Big thanks to Mark Delgado for joining the show. He understands El Tráfico in a way that very few can. A Super Clásico participant, an LA kid from the jump, now back in his hometown playing for a Galaxy team that's atop the Western Conference. Can they stay there? We will find out. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, El Tráfico on Saturday, April 6th. You can watch on MLS Season Pass. A full slate this weekend. No games early in the day, so that's been a little bit of a scheduling issue for some, a delight for me, just because I get to watch two games off the jump in full without any other distractions. But on Saturday, it's going to be 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 5, 6, 7 games in that window. See, I can count, just like Chicho Arango. And then a couple games at 8:30, 4, 5 of those, and then one at 10:30, one game on Sunday. Tune in to Match Day 8. Big thanks to Mark, as well as Lloyd Sam, who is an absolute delight on this show. I hope you enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Adios. We'll be right back.